welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Jason, welcome back to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good, Scott. Good to see you again, bud.
Great to see you. I can't believe it's been 2 years.
It's flown by. But I got so excited when we did the first one. I wanted to do one the following week with you.
Well, Jason, like, we've been chatting for 25 minutes already before we hit the call button. I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours. We've covered some good stuff just in a quick 25 minutes, but mostly about the stuff that me talking and you asking the questions. So I need to spin it around and get more out of you. But thank you so much for agreeing to come back on the pod, mate. It's a pleasure to chat to you, and it's a great conversation. And actually, for me, it's quite a timely one because some of the things we're going to speak about, I know you're going to come from it from obviously a US perspective, and I know not everything transfers across the pond. But I've skimmed through the book. I only got it yesterday or the day before. I've had to skim through for it, and it's fantastic. And I'm looking forward to it. I finished work today, and I can't wait to start reading it over the Christmas break. But there's so many things that I can see already that definitely transfer across. But it'd be good to pick up things that do and things that don't. So we're going to get into that. That's the conversation. But before we do, and I know you were on episode, it's in the 90s somewhere, but I'll dig it out and put the link into the show notes here, but where you spoke about your background before. But for those that didn't pick that episode up or want to know more, bit more about you, just a bit of a background to kind of what you did, what it is you currently do, if that's okay.
Yeah. I grew up in Bolton, as all young boys are. I was obsessed with football. Played till I was like 32, loved it. You know, would play for any team. Loved just playing with like good guys, you know, not necessarily all the best players, just good people. And then growing up, I saw that the people I played with, when it was good people, we tend to have the more success. And then when I'd see my mates finish playing and they would have no involvement in football, I just looked at it and thought, there's no way I can do that. When I finish playing, what do I want to do? So at 24, I started taking my badges. And at 26, I was lucky enough to be given an opportunity to coach at Preston North End. So I did 6 years there. Fantastic foundation for me with great people. Gary Peters was the academy director. No nonsense with Gary, but brilliant, brilliant person. Knew what he wanted. And then in 2003, I moved to the States, and I've been there ever since. And I'm currently the director of coaching at FC Portland in Oregon.
Well, you've been there for over 20 years, and you've still got your Bolton accent there, Jason. There's a little bit of an American twinge in there, but
I hope there's not.
A little bit. I'm picking it up.
Yeah, you don't want to hear my American accent, mate.
Fantastic. Well, brilliant. And I know you've been back to the UK recently. Do you go back and to Preston? Do you go back and see anyone there, or is it moved?
Last year I went back and we had a bit of a reunion with the Preston coaches. I've just got back. I went back last week. I've got two daughters there and a grandson. I think last time I spoke to you, I think my grandson had just been born.
Absolutely. Yep.
And so I go by Emily. You mean Emily, my daughter, she's a professional referee.
Yeah, we've been saying before.
So she had Port Vale and Walsall, so I went to that game, and that was great. You know, going to the League Two game, seeing how football really is with the fans, and yeah, watching Emily. You know, obviously, I'm so proud of her to get into a man's world and officiate games, and yeah, I'm so proud of her. She does a great job.
That's a fantastic achievement. It really is, isn't it? I don't suppose you really know what it's like to go through that process and get to where she's got to without doing it yourself, because that couldn't have been easy, you know? That couldn't have been easy. So fair play.
Yeah, very she's good. Done amazing.
And the grandson's two now?
Yeah, he's two. He's
Is he playing?
I went to his little football class.
Yeah.
And he was obviously he's two, but it was so cute, you know, He's doing what you should do. He's following tasks. He's being a great teammate and he's trying his best. It's not rocket science, is it?
No, brilliant. Well, look, and look, it's funny, isn't it? You say, we joke around saying, look at 2 years old, what they're doing. But actually, the right message of two could be the same when they're 22, right? Or 32,
Yeah.
because the right message is the right messages. So
Yeah.
brilliant. All right. Thank you for that, Jason. Okay. And so last time we spoke, I think it was like December 2022, I'm sure. And we were talking about developing your coaching blueprint. I just thought it might be interesting for a minute or two just to talk about, looking back on that a little bit, reflecting back now a few years afterwards. What is your thoughts on that? Anything changed? Did you get it right first time around, happy with it, or have you kind of had a rethink on things?
Oh yeah, gosh, I didn't get it right.
You're not supposed to, are you? That's part of it.
The first one was ramblings of a madman, I think. But now we're on our fourth one, and our fourth one, it's pretty good now. It pretty aligns with the values of who we all are at the soccer club. We tweaked it a little bit last year, but nothing crazy. And now more people are buying in, which is good. That's what's kind of frustrating, and this is why leaderships of soccer organizations need to be brave. It's kind of hard to understand why that's a difficult sell to try and work together as a team, because as a coach, you probably wouldn't accept any players that turn around and say, I'm not following the values of the team. You probably wouldn't play them. So that's kind of like, it's given me a lot of patience. And then obviously now you see people's understanding of it, and some people learn it a little bit quicker than others. But we've got 35 coaches now at the club that believe in what we're doing. And then I've got to be patient in each coach and how long that will take for them to just develop those principles that we have and just try and follow that plan, and then putting your principles into the practice session so the kids know. And then watching, trying to help the kids, because so many kids, they all learn differently. But all the kids receive, our principles of play, and on practice sessions, we ask them, hey, we're working on attacking. Here are the two principles of play I want you to focus on. So you don't overload them, and
Bite size.
you just focus on those two things. And you keep asking questions, when the time's right to step in and say, right, great job, we're doing it, or hey, we're not doing it. What are those two things we're working on? And just keep going on about it. But we
Have
just
you had...
tweaked it a little bit in terms of, like, I like focusing on that, like I call it the seven elements of development, where it's like motivation, self-discipline, coachability, being competitive, joy. Obviously, joy is the most important one, and confidence, and resilience. We try and focus on those, and then try and help the kids deal with all those seven elements. I think obviously joy is the important one, and then let the outcome of the of games take care of itself.
It's funny because when you have the word joy, does it mean different things to different players? I mean, is that part of it? I mean, I guess part of your seven elements is them understanding what it means to them, right? So, like, what does resilience mean to me? Because that's your version of it might be different. So how do we all agree what resilience looks like, right? How do we all agree what joy looks like, right? Because actually, I might like mucking around and being a pain in the bum over there, but my teammates don't. So let's agree what it looks like. Is that part of that process? Is kind of learning what it
Yeah,
looks
because
like for all of
we
us?
tell them, I think, the word fun or joy probably frowned upon in the US. I don't know what it's like in the UK now with me being out for a long time, but it's kind of frowned upon. It look, it's kind of, people hear that word fun and they think you're just goofing around at practice. And it's like, well, it's not. The fun part is that they're getting better. They're interacting with the teammates. They're working hard. They're winning, but when they're not winning, they're figuring out problems and coming back the week after and winning. Those are the fun parts, I think, for a footballer.
Absolutely. So on the blueprint more broadly, then, just and final question, this one, and we'll move on to the more important stuff. But just thinking back, obviously you've gone through a great process there, and I know how passionate you are about Making sure the values and the messaging is correct and sticking by that, which I'm a big fan of, and I think you've done some great work to get where you've got to now, where I guess it's more fine-tuning than making like any drastic changes. Did you have to compromise on any of the principles, or was it a case of just trying to make sure people understood those principles or recruit people to buy those principles? I'm just trying to work out a balance to how much
Right,
did you have to
so
shift
sometimes
anything?
people, yeah, sometimes people say, sometimes have principles of, how they want the players to behave. Our principles that we talk about are actually like playing principles. So going through the process of, if the ball's here, we do this. So we like, for example, like we only work on the four moments of the game. We don't do set pieces. We're in an industry of youth soccer where if we're standing around doing set pieces all the time, the kids are just going to be bored. And so we don't bother with that. But so let's, an example would be our attacking principles. So we say our attacking principles that, if we win the ball, we spread out, we separate into space and away from the opponent, and we're scanning the field, ready to, we're making decisions. So that's how we do it. And then we say the second principle is, you must have a connection with the ball carrier. Whether it's an angle of support, whether it's communication, but that's our second principle. And then we say our third principle is, can we create overloads in groups? And then if we can't create overloads, we'll switch the ball to disorganize the opponent. And then we'll switch the ball, and then we try and penetrate space that way. And then we have two areas in the 18 that we call the red zone. And it's like, right, we attack the red zone with a pass, a dribble, or a run, and then we score. So those are our principles that we teach. And it's like, well, if any coach comes in and they have a different philosophy on that, I kind of think the principles that are just basic. They're not Pep Guardiola principles. They're just basic principles,
Fantastic. Absolutely. And I guess then, at least then, once you know what you're going to work on, as long as your practices are working on one or two of those things, whether it's a 3v3, an 8v8, 11v11, 1v1, whatever it might be, you can't go wrong, can you? It's going to transfer
No.
into the game, right?
Yeah. So if we work on, say, if we worked on switching play, we would create moments where it's compact on one side. So we would just say, hey, the principle we're working on is switching the point of attack and entering the red zone. That's all we would say to the players. So the players are out there, there's no stress. And it's like, right, here's what we're doing. So we're not throwing a million coaching points at them. They get the ball, it's compact on one side. You've got one guy who's trying to get through three players, then you would stop it and say, hey, what's the principle? If we can't get through here, what do we do? And then they'll say, switch it. It's like, right, we'll switch it then.
I
So it's
get you.
just, it's I mean,
It helps
people
that. I guess it helps you
might be
guys in your
listening
planning.
being like, it's so simple, but it actually is so simple.
Well, I guess the difficult bit is kind of getting to that stage, right, where you know what your principles are for you guys. Once you get to that space, then it feels easy, right? But actually getting to that space, isn't it? That's the learning, isn't it? It's learning what the important things are. And we spoke about FA courses before we came on the podcast, but I guess the principles are broadly kind of aligned. It's just about then how you adapt them for what you want and how you see them linking up together, right, in your practices.
Yeah, I think if you run a club, I think you've got to have them. If you had one from each four moment of the game, at least you've got one.
Absolutely,
At
yeah.
least players know. I've found this way of doing it over the last 5 years, Scott, as when you're doing your practices and you're designing your practice, it challenges you as a coach where you design a practice to only focus on two or three. I've coached some age groups where I've not focused on any because I have a girls team and they're great, but they haven't been coached before and it's a brand new team that we've got.
Starting off,
But
yeah.
my principles are, hey, this is fun. You need to be willing to run, and we're going to compete. I've not touched the attack. I've not touched the spread out, separate, scan, connection with the ball. I've not touched that. They're not ready for that.
But
So I
that's where
think,
you're focusing on probably on the elements, right? Your seven elements, which are probably teaching the kind of almost like the way you approach the principles first, right? Which if you don't get that bit right, they're not going to come anyway. So you get the
No.
elements embedded first, and then you can build in the principles right around that.
Yeah, and I think, that's good for coaching. You've got to adapt and change. Where this group now, I'm doing things to try and help them that I've never done before. They turn up now and there's a bag and it's got a green, a yellow, and a red poker chip in, and the girls drop the coin in the box on what mood they're in. And then me and my assistant will look at it and say, oh, we've got 14 greens and two yellows. Hey, we can do a little bit tonight. So
I
it's
absolutely love that.
and but I took it away, and then the girls were like, no, we want it back. So because I thought I'm being a bit silly, I'm going a little bit overboard here. So I took it away for 1 week, and then the girls were all like, we
Wanted it
want that,
back.
we want the box back. But then we had it one time where we had 14 green, one yellow, and one red. So then me and the assistant are saying, we don't know who the red is. We
No, it's
don't know.
anonymous, right?
Yeah. So
Yeah.
we then said to the group, look, if you drop a red in, my assistants are female. So I said, if you drop a red in and you feel comfortable to just walking past Jen and saying, hey, I'm the red, we'll know then. No one else will know. We'll know that the others, we can do a little, be a little bit more demanding. But with you, we don't. So that's where it's like, oh, it triggered me. But once a red went in, I'm like, I don't know who that is. I might be going at this young girl,
Yeah.
and she's struggling today. So,
Yeah.
but it's worked great.
Well, it's like, James, I mean, that God, that's the whole podcast that alone. I think that's a fantastic idea. And look, just to kind of get, I guess it's just a snapshot of where the group's at, right? All greens, happy days, we're good. Yellows, never go. Think about it a little bit. Like you say, you don't necessarily need to know the individual who said it. It's more like, right, how do we approach session today? How do we, do we need to dial down a little bit maybe just to be sure? Or actually, is there a big red flag here we've got to find a bit more about and do something with it in the right way?
And that's what coaching is, Scott, isn't it? It's adapting.
It is, yeah. But I think, I like to say that I'm quite good, and I'm probably not, by the way, but I like to say I'm quite good at giving a session 5 to 10 minutes. We always start with free play, watching the boys, see who's at it, see who's not at it, and do that. But you're 10 minutes in by then, and it's subjective, right? And I might have missed the most important three or three things in the picture because I can't look at 14 kids all at the same time. Where this gives you a picture straight away, just a rough idea where they're at. Again, it might not be accurate. Someone put a green that's feeling a bit yellow, you don't know, but it gives you an opportunity. It's more information, right? And it's from the get-go, it's from the very first thing. So I think that's fantastic. And I love
But
that. So
like adapt, it's like I had one girls' team 3 years ago, and we were in ECNL at the time, and we were struggling. So we couldn't get anywhere near the red zone. So the principle of attacking the red zone was silly. We never got near the 18. So then what we did was
have to start kicking it long.
we brought a green zone back, which was just inside the opponent's half. And then we challenged the girls to try and get in that.
Building
And
up.
then they would come off and be like, Coach, we got in the green zone 5 times. And I'm like, that's great. You can look back and you're like, well, it's kind of silly, but then you're like, well, if it helps.
Exactly, it's progression, right? Yeah, and it's all age and stage, right? There's no point. You haven't got to be anywhere. You wear where you are, where you are, right? And the question, how where you are, where you are, where you're going to get to, and it's that journey. If you just go straight for the end result without the bit in between, you're probably going to end up going crazy.
And that team now, I'd say 90% of them are still at the club. And that season we had, Scott, we played 20, lost 19, tied one, conceded 107, and scored one.
But they're
And
still there, still playing.
they're still
But
there.
you won.
And this summer, they went to regionals. They won the President's Cup in Oregon, and they went to
Superb.
regionals. And they are like, when they get older, and they come across a problem, they'll be fine.
They'll be
They'll
able
just
to
say,
deal with it. Yeah.
I can
You
deal with
spin
it.
that around, Jason. I wonder how many players, I'm not saying this is the case necessarily, but I often see some of the players that are in winning teams that do well. two seasons later, then their team doesn't exist anymore. You know, certainly the players, and they've gone and done different things. It's not the same thing, is it? Where if you can galvanize around something, put in the same direction, that definitely makes the bond stronger. Obviously, it's nice to win still, but actually, if you make it all about the winning only, then I don't think that builds a good team ethic anyway.
No, and this is why, Scott, when you're building a kind of game model or blueprint for your organization or your team, it takes a long time. So we're now, you know, 5 years I've been doing it at FC, but we're now after 5 years seeing the rewards. But it's took 5 years. You know, we in August we took 24 teams to a tournament, and 14 of them made the final, and three finished third place. But we don't go off bragging about that. But it's like, well, we're seeing the rewards
It
of what
shows.
we've been doing.
But 5 years isn't long enough, Jason. I mean, I get 5 years isn't that long, is it? If you think about actually embedding
No.
something, give it, I mean, look how quick a year goes. You're talking what? I don't mean sessions you have a week, but it's not that. If you put it down to sessions and hours, it's not that many to embed what is quite a lot of stuff and practice, you know, in an invasion sport, you know, playing against other teams that maybe have had, you know, have a different way of approaching it with regards to selection and recruitment and stuff like that. So, you know, 5 years is no time at all to get success over 5 years, and a success in inverted commas, like to see the development process play out in practice, that's a phenomenal achievement.
Because success for us is not, well, me personally, is not winning. Winning's great.
That's the byproduct, right?
I just want to see. I always love watching young kids react to when things are not going well.
Yeah, and deal with
That's
it.
the true character, isn't it? It's like when you're winning, everyone's high-fiving each other,
It's easy.
especially here. And it's like, well, what are you going to do when things are going bad? That's your
Well,
true character.
100%. Look, well, because you're not very busy and you have loads of time on your hands, you managed to you managed to produce another book.
I know, I remember we spoke about it, didn't we? Is there another one coming? And I said, absolutely not.
No, I knew it was only a matter of time. Well, I'm so pleased you did. Genuinely, look, and you can tell me more about it. I had a look through it last night. Actually, every chapter I'm dipping in, kind of, I want to read that one more. Read more of that one. Like I said at the beginning, for me, it's quite timely because you cover some ground there that I think isn't necessarily spoke about. It's the first thing to say. I don't think it is, and I think it needs to be. And I know anyone that knows you or follows anything that you do in your social media and stuff like that knows that you care about this game, you care about kids and development, and it all comes from a good place. And I think, you know, the danger sometimes is when you look to not necessarily criticize but critique things and offer suggestions or think people suddenly just think, oh, you're bitter, you're twisted, something's not quite right there, and you get yourself kind of like almost put in that place, and you couldn't be further from that position as a person. And I know you love the game and want the best for it. So we'll talk about the book a little bit, that's okay. But before we start, just a bit of background. So how did it come about? What is the book first, and how did it come about? And then we'll get into more this around what's in it in a second or two.
Yeah, the title obviously
Go on, tell us.
is pretty controversial, and I get it how people would say, you know, this guy's a moron. But it's US grassroots soccer, great on paper, shit on grass.
It got me straight away because it's the first time I've heard, like, you know, people don't ever, all the books that go out there, they're all lovely books and all nice things about nice stuff and send everyone what we kind of want to hear. But straight away, you're saying, actually, do you know what? There's something here we need to be listening to that's maybe not exactly what we all want to hear, which it got my attention straight away.
Right, and it's like, it's my stupid sense of humor too. You know, but it's like, you know, you hear everybody talk about stuff, and it's like, well, it's all right talking about it. What are we producing? So the last 10 years, I've noticed a massive change. When I came in 2003, we were still on the wave of the 94 World Cup, and soccer was progressing. You know, the women's game has been unbelievable. The women are fantastic. Obviously, I believe they got mistreated in the 90s when, you know, when they were doing awesome, and obviously getting treated differently than the men was ridiculous. But the women have always had an advantage over every other country because playing football, playing soccer was accepted. You know, my wife in the mid 80s when she was six was playing on an organized team. I mean, who in the mid 80s in Europe?
Wasn't happening,
Female,
was it? Wasn't happening.
it wasn't happening. So they've got, you know, they got 35 year leg up. I think, obviously, I think the nations are catching the US up, but the women have always been successful because of that. It's been accepted. They have great pathways for the women with, you know, playing in club soccer, playing in college. Obviously, the pro game dipped and was up and down and up and down. I think obviously the women have been mistreated on that, but the men, it's obviously we're behind the men. I say we. I shouldn't be saying we, should I? If I'm English, but the men, they're behind. And then over the last 10 years, this winning at all cost at youth level is absolutely sucking the life out of the joy of what we should be enjoying by playing any sport. It's not just football. You know, any sport here is win at all costs. When you lose, it's somebody else's fault. Or if you don't make the A team, you're going to leave and join another club. Or you're going into that sport and you're hanging your hat on playing college soccer at Division One or pro. And those are all terrible things to be going playing any sport. You've got to be playing it because, well, I love this. This is fun for me. So that's what's triggered the book. And obviously, I don't get as many emails as I used to, but when, you know, seeing people react to when the child doesn't make the A team, straight away they think it's okay to open a computer and tell
And
the
typing.
coach how ridiculous it is. And you're like, oh, come on. You know, we've got to try. You know, sometimes with your children, it's like, yeah, we want to protect our children, we love them. But at some stages in their life, they've got to handle stuff themselves and figure out what it is. And we're not letting them. I mean, years ago we had a Zoom call, our coaches, with Bill Bezick, and Bill Bezick's the psychologist from England, amazing. And he made a great comment of, we love our children too much. This generation gets too much love. We're quick to jump in and solve problems for them. And when you're trying to coach a player to be a decision maker, now they, you know, a lot of the time, Scott, they just stood there and they can't make that decision because we do it all for them. You know, I'm not perfect. I find myself doing the same sometimes for my kids, and I've got to check myself and be like, what am I doing here?
Jason, it's funny you say that. I just spoke to a parent a couple of weeks back and just said that conversation with them saying, look, I love your kid enough to be able to make tough choices for them. It's harder for you because you're the dad. I get it, but I love them enough to make tough choices. Like, you know, that's the truth. You've got to be able to see past the things that are actually going to help the child and things that aren't going to help the child, you know? And you're spot on. I mean, especially we live in an area quite middle class, you know, lovely parents want the best of their kids. I get it, but they do too much for them. They literally they work them into the academies. They work them into opportunities. They do the hard work for them, and the kids are not earning it. And then it comes outside, it doesn't work, and they can't understand why. It's like, hold on a minute, they've not actually earned that themselves. You know, if you help them to earn it, then you might see more successes. But the more you're doing for them, it doesn't actually work. But we'll get on to all that stuff. What I just want to be clear about, then, Jay, is just so for those that obviously haven't seen the book yet, when is it out?
It's out now.
Oh, it's available now, right?
Yeah, it's
Okay.
available on Amazon.
When was it released?
Monday.
All right. And it was okay, fantastic. Some people might have seen them, which is great. Again, it will put a link into it so people can find the link to get hold of the book if they want to for the bet whatever link is best for you. But just so then an overview then for those who are gonna get the book, how's it framed and what kind of stuff do you cover? And then we'll go into more detail about some of those key topics in a minute. But you know, how is it positioned and how do you work through the stuff?
Yeah, so it's kind of a lot of what we've just been talking about. You know, this winning at all cost culture, how it's damaging our youth. And you know, it's not it's it's stopping. I think it's sucking the life out of the enjoyment. And I'm worried that we're not going to have a game to play because there's still a massive dropout rate in the US. By the time a child's 14, the dropout rate has always been high. 70% of kids drop out of playing soccer by the time they're age 14. That's still happening. So I talk about that, but I talk about the importance of educating parents and coaches. In the US, you never hear anybody talking about long term. Everything is short term, instant success. If they don't get that, they go off and try and chase something else. And they're trying to get this instant success. And it's like, well, that's not reality. You know, I talk about how important it is to have like a supportive environment, and the environment is important for them. Do your research, on a club, but people don't, and
Just see
they
the
don't want
badge,
to
don't
hear
they? The
about it.
opportunity. Yeah, worry about the problems
I
later.
mean, I've spoke to parents, and they're telling me what another club is offering, and they're leaving, and I've actually said, they're lying to you, and they're like, well, we're still going, and I'm like, okay, so I'm telling you they're telling lies, and you're saying, yeah, we're still going. I can't
Wow,
wrap my head
where'd
around
you
that.
go around with that? Yeah. So I
Yeah.
get, so for the book's point of view, then what you're looking at there is kind of the problems that you see in their impacts on the game, and you talk a bit about, you know, what they are, what they come about, and then maybe some ways in which, you know, we can move past them.
Yeah, and I've also, I don't like, obviously, we spoke about it before we got on air about, I also offer solutions. You know, I'm not one of those who were like, this is terrible, this is terrible. Sorry, I've got nothing to offer.
Yeah, fix it.
You
I'm
know,
out of it.
I do talk about the importance of, having some kind of game model and some kind of plan, and, focusing on the person first rather than the athlete. You know, I think it's about winning the relationship game first, especially, and that would, I think that would always work, even when I played in the 80s and 90s. I think that still would have worked.
It's a
But
human
I think,
nature thing, right? That's not a time
yeah,
thing, yeah.
and I think more than ever now, with the generation we have, it's about winning that relationship game and showing them that you care for them. And when they get something wrong, it's okay. Give them a solution, see if they can try it. If they're still getting it wrong, it's okay. But I think we have to focus, we should be focusing more on the work ethic that they have. You know, how hard are they working? You know, forget about whether they can do some step overs or they've scored a hat trick. How hard is that player working? You know, what's their attitude like? And I spoke to you about my high school team. You know, the character was unbelievable, and that's what got us to what we, what we achieved, and that's in this season. It was down to character.
So, Jason, this might be a bit unfair because I know you cover lots in the book, but off the top of your head, or if you want to, I mean, you can pick more if you want to, but could you, is it fair, would you be able to maybe discuss, I don't know, three or four of maybe what you might say are the main issues that you think impact on grassroots soccer in the US? Maybe we could look at one at a time and have a chat about it because, I mean, I know you cover more than three or four in the book, you cover lots of things, but if you maybe you have to group a few things together, but like things you thought, okay, let's look at this one and discuss that a little bit. Because I think there's some of these will be the same in the UK and probably across the planet potentially, but it'd be
I'd be
good to
interested.
see what's there.
I'd be interested, obviously, get your take on it when when we talk about this.
Well,
So no.
look in the book, it was music in my ears because actually, I think sometimes because you get in a little bubble, don't you? So, I'm not here. I coach in England, but I don't coach in England. I coach in a small village, like on the outskirts of London. I mean, that's my bubble, you know? So, we may go 20 miles one way and 20 miles the other on a cup run. We might go 30 miles, but, it's a small bubble. So, but these problems, when you find out someone else has got them, particularly if it's as far afield as where you are compared to where we are, then it almost makes you feel, I'm not saying pleased, but it's nice that a problem shared is a problem to have in some way. So like I kind of feel like actually if you've got that then it's a good chance for us to have a chat about why and what we can do to address them. But yeah, if you don't mind then we can pick maybe three or four things and go through each one.
In the book, the second chapter is about a culture shift, which obviously is very, very hard. So that's one of the main problems that we have. We need to change our culture on how we view sports here. It's not you can't be playing because it's a pathway to D1 college or pro, because majority of you are going to be very disappointed. So we need that culture shift of trying to move to having this long-term vision letting your children solve problems, decide when you should solve a problem for them or when they should do it. You know, you shouldn't be solving a problem for them when they've been put on a B team. Let them figure that out. You just be supportive for them and encourage them to just, hey, keep working hard. It's someone's opinion. Just keep going. Be a great teammate. So the culture part is one that I think we need to change.
Well, the irony of that, Jason, is like just by definition, and I totally agree with you. I think we've got a certain problem over here. It's slightly different in the sense of what people are aiming for, but I think it's the same. But really, even if you said that was an okay aim to get, you know, if you want to go to the D1 or be a professional, you know, if that's what you're after, not that I think that's the right thing to do, but even if it was, surely the worst way of going about that is to solve your kids' problems for them, right? The best way to get there is to give them the toughest journey they can possibly have, is in many ways,
That's a
right?
great
So
point, mate.
it doesn't work for us. There's an obsession with the kids getting signed, an obsession by parents with the kids getting signed at a pro academy. So under 13s now, these parents are so desperate to have their kids signed by a pro academy, Arsenal, Chelsea, Spurs, Watford, whatever it might be, the London ones we're at, you know, they're obsessed with it. So you've got parents that are trying so hard to get their kids there that they're basically killing the chance for the kid in the first place, because they're doing a lot of the work for them, you know, that isn't letting the kid do the work in the first place. It's like trying to run a
That's a
marathon
great
in the
point.
Yeah, if you're trying to run a marathon in 6 months' time, I can't run the miles for my kid. I've got to make him run the miles. If I run half of it and the starting gun goes and suddenly he gets to the starting line and can't do it, well, I've undermined it for him. And I think that sounds like a similar thing. Would you say that's what's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy that that's what's happening over there. But you're interfering. You know, you're interfering with, hey, the joy of what they should be experiencing. The kids are going to play off that, and it's going to be too stressful for them.
Absolutely, and
But
we see
and
it.
I don't want to sound like I'm squashing people's dreams. Of course, I had a dream of, you know, I wanted to be a professional soccer player, but I didn't play solely for that. You know, I still want to coach professionally. I want to go, you know, when I coached at Preston, I want to go back coaching professionally again. But I know I've just got to keep going and be the best I can be. I still love it, FC Portland, but I'm still going to try and be better every day. And
It's the
when that
process,
opportunity
right?
comes, yeah, if the opportunity comes, obviously I'll still need to keep learning, but I think I'll be ready. And that's how I played. I wasn't focused on this end outcome of being a pro. I was focused on, right, I love playing. And if I keep playing, keep learning, I keep getting better, I may have that opportunity. And I
Jason,
don't
just one of those things then, because you said obviously the women's game is in a stronger position because of its history, which makes total sense. And credit for that, because that's great. Is there a danger that the girls' football goes down a similar path to what the boys' football is? Or is there a boy-girl split at the moment, culturally?
Yeah, I think this is my opinion. I think girls playing football here suffer more because of this anxiety of playing Division One and hanging your hat on being a Division One athlete or going pro, because we have so many leagues now. You know, we don't have one local league where everyone plays. We have so many, and everybody thinks that if they're playing this league, they're going to get what they want. And it's like, well, no, there's more than that. And then I see now young players, their self-worth is based on what league you're playing in. And if you're winning, that is so damaging for a young person to
Short-sighted, isn't it?
have that. That's why when, you know, that 2008 team that we had that were fantastic, fantastic players, great characters. But when we pulled out of ECNL as a club, I mean, we got so much negative feedback from people saying, why are you doing that? We're leaving. And I'm like, but it's not healthy for us. This is not healthy for
Doesn't
our
align
female
with,
athletes at this time. You know, I have no problem with what these top leagues, the premise of, I'm no problem with the premise of it. But in America, the cream doesn't rise to the top. We don't have promotion relegation. We should have a system where the cream rises to the top. So all this BS that's floating around, you can't argue against it. You know, if you say I play in this league, and that's the top, you know, like when we're, you know, when we're kids, if you say I play in the conference, you're like, oh, you're a pretty good player. If you're playing pro, we know you're a good player. You know, growing up, we have all those leagues, don't we? You have the Northwest Counties and, you know, all these leagues that you have that they'll tell you where you're at. Here, we've just got loads of leagues where people apply, they get in, and we take your money.
So with the culture thing then, Jason, do you, what's the biggest, what's causing it in there? I mean, is it the commercialization? Is it a lack of joined up thinking? Is it parents and players? Is it a combination of stuff? I'm trying to think of what the fundamental root cause is,
Yeah,
and then
no.
how do we change that?
It's definitely the adults. It's not the players. You know, it's the adults. You know, and I don't want to be bashing. I don't want to be bashing
So what
parents
is
on
the
it. But
adults?
yeah, I don't want to be bashing parents. It's coaches as well.
Exactly. It's all of us, isn't it? We'll play our part.
Yeah, it's club leadership. It's, you know, I think US soccer needs to take a turn and become a servant leader. Like, what can we do for you? Instead of all this talking about elite, only discussing national teams, not discussing long-term development, and not getting out to clubs and saying, hey, what can we do to help you? That's what the path I think they should take. And then everybody can, you know, if they're shouting long-term development from the rooftops, and and how important having a game model is, a plan, and now I'm saying to our parents, hey, we're doing this, they're hearing the top governing body say how important it is. And then they can say, oh, well, they're doing it at FC. Whereas I'm doing it here, not many others are doing it. Everyone thinks I'm some kind of crackpot.
Isn't it ironic the fact that most people would say, I mean, and I'm talking people that actually study this, like doctors, researchers, people that really understand, not just like practitioners, people that have done, like, I guess, the academic side to it all. I've never heard anybody say that the best way to develop somebody in anything isn't long term. It's always long term. So, but yet
Yeah.
you've got to try and find, like, and yet they want to be the best at what they want to be at, but they don't
Yeah.
want to buy into the long term thing. Like, it just seems so illogical, doesn't it? It's a kind of
Yeah.
like, I don't get it, but that is the world we're in. And the minute you make the goal about an outcome, like getting signed or playing pro, whatever it might be, it's almost like then you miss out the focus of actually the development part that comes with it. It's like, actually focus on that bit, and the rest will probably, you'll land where you land, right? But you've got the
Yeah,
best
but
chance of
you.
landing at the best place possible if you focus on the development.
Yeah, and you made a great point of if you're over helicoptering, overing them all the time, telling them when well, they probably wouldn't reach the dream, but if they do, they have to figure all that stuff out themselves.
It's
They're
going to
on
be
their own
hard,
now.
isn't it? Yeah.
It's going to be so
On the
hard for
lines
them.
then, yeah. Well, look, I don't want to gloat, but it's nice to hear you got the same problem that we have over here. So,
Oh, no.
makes me feel a bit
I
better.
yeah.
Another one, number two then. So having a cultural shift definitely is great. Fantastic. What would be a second thing you might say is one of the
I
things we
think
could talk about?
what we talked about there, there's too many leagues. There's too many of these leagues where parents are not quite sure of what the league is. They don't do the research on what the league is. So now all these all that matters to a parent is they can tell the neighbor that my son or daughter plays in this league, and they, you know, I don't know what it's like in the UK, but they kind of like bragging about the kids here. And hearing other people say, that's amazing. And it's like, well, the person who's saying that's amazing has no idea what you're talking about. So then it's like, well, we need a tiered system where if we had a local league, so we have like, let's say on the girls' side, we have ECNL, we have ECRL, we have the GA, we have Elite 64, you have DPL. And you have the local leagues. So say if you win your league in the Premier at local level, I think you should move up to one of them. I think those organizations have obviously got to figure out who's the top one. And then you keep moving through. And so say if ECNL was the top one, when you say, oh, our team is in ECNL, you'd be like, wow, that is the creme de la creme.
Yeah.
But back in 2003, when I moved, there was none of that. The cream did rise to the top because everyone was playing locally. You won your state championship, you moved to regionals, and you play, and you were the best team. You know, you won national, you were a national champion, you were the best team in the States. Now we have five different versions of a national champion because of money.
So in a league, then you're going to get a mixed range of abilities. You're going to get some strong teams, not strong teams. So is that how it
Oh,
works? Yeah, you won't get,
yeah.
so you might get three strong teams in one league, another two in another league, and where they'll play
Yeah.
together. You and
Yeah.
so you, it's, there's no streaming essentially, is there? It's just
No.
you go in a league, and are the
Yeah.
leagues independent businesses then, essentially? Are they like their own
No,
companies?
the leagues are all tied into that organization.
Right.
And then, so say, you know, in Oregon, we'd be in like a Northwest League,
Yeah.
which would be Oregon, Seattle, Idaho. Teams from that would be
Yeah.
in it. So you're traveling, but you're not going too crazy.
Yeah.
But you know, where they were, you know, I'll give them some credit where they what they do well is when you go to a showcase, which college coaches go and watch, they do look at your record. So if you've won one and lost seven, they'll put you in with another conference
Yeah, I
team
see. So it'll
that has a
shut you
similar
there.
record.
Yeah, I
So
get
you're
you.
not going to showcases and getting thumped, you know, you're
Battered,
not.
yeah.
So they do a great job of that. I just think we've let too many in. And now it's like, well, who is the creme de la creme? We don't know. We've no idea. And it's kind of, you know, parents are just all the player wants to say is, I've played in this league. You know, playing locally now is kind of frowned upon.
Yeah.
That's where that self-worth comes in. You kind of think you're useless because I'm only playing locally. It's like, well, that's a terrible thought process to have.
I know that obviously in the States, regionally, it's bigger areas, right? I mean, I mind about going 20 miles down the road, but I'm sure you guys travel a bit further than that. Is part of the problem the fact that to get enough teams and enough of leagues together, you need more leagues, and therefore they're being created? Is it a logistical thing there, or is it not that? Is it just a case of just not being well organized?
Well, I think these leagues were formed because they were upset of, you know, standards that were being done by, you know, the governing body. These leagues were formed because they're not happy with what state organizations offer.
Right.
So I get it,
Yeah.
but now it's just gotten out of control.
Yeah.
You know, my third one
Go on.
is account, you know, accountability. You know, it's like none of these clubs, we don't have standards set by somebody. It's accountability. And it's like, well, I know that obviously the FA, they changed the charter standards. Is it called
Yeah.
accredited?
Yeah.
England. Yeah. So they do that. I think that's what we should do. You know, if they give us some criteria of, right, here's what you do. If you pass all these, we will give you five stars.
Yeah.
And on the website, it's like, right, if you go
You can
to
shout about
this
it.
club, so when a parent is doing the research, you can just click on, well, who are all the five-star clubs in my area? Oh, I would like my child to go to that one. That's why I think we should have some accountability on this, because it is like the Wild Wild West.
So at the moment, there's none of that. You couldn't really know. There's no way of benchmarking
No.
externally against the club.
No. And
Um,
then
are the leagues?
going back
Go
to
ahead.
our culture, Scott,
Yeah.
I'm not sure that many people are that bothered that I have
No.
a game model at FC and we try and work on a development plan and educate the coaching staff and the players and the parents. I'm not sure whether, you know, I've still not got buy-in on, oh, well, that's what I want to do. Because I always say to a parent, you know, when they leave, and it's no problem, you know, if you want to leave, you shouldn't be here. But I always ask them, hey, I always tell them, hey, when you leave, wherever you're going to, all you got to do is ask the technical director, do you have a long-term plan for my child and can I see it? And ask that one question and then base your decision on what the answer is.
Jason, so like I find this so frustrating, and I'm thinking, listening to you say it is easy, is easy for me, kind of like hearing it rather than me saying it myself. Do you think, obviously, you've been in this world a long time and you know it very well and you're passionate about it and you've done your research, done your time, and you've learned, and you know, I'm behind you on that curve, but like, you know, I'm on the similar path, I think, but behind you on that curve, but on the similar path. But if I was just the parent, and I say not just, but if I, you know, if I wasn't involved in soccer at all,
Yeah.
would I make these same mistakes? Would I not understand it and see it? Are we not getting the message across about the importance of these things? Is it, is part, it's on us, the fact that we're not helping the parents and the people that to understand the importance of things like, okay, has the club got a game model? What are its values? What are its principles? You know, if we look at the badge, what's the environment like there? You know, and would I'd like to think I wouldn't be that naive as a parent, because I'd want to do a bit of research, or I think just general stuff might help. But are we, is that just not the real world? And actually, parents just don't know, and therefore they just kind of almost go with that herd mentality and with the crowd. And it
Yeah, it's just that culture thing, isn't it? It's like what I talk about,
is.
changing the culture. Now,
Yeah.
you wouldn't take your child to a school that has no plan,
No.
no curriculum of how they teach the.
No.
So going to a sports organization is exactly the same as going to a school. You want them to educate them. You want to try and, you know, make sure that they're teaching the child to be a good person, whatever that is, you know, be a good
Yeah.
human being, you know, work hard, try your best, accept failure. But if you were taking your kid to school and the teachers are like, oh yeah, we don't have a plan. Each teacher does what they want.
Yeah.
You would grab your kid and you'd run from that school.
Well, the funny
No,
thing is,
that's the soccer world. It's like you bring your ch child here. The technical director, I have no communication with the coach that your child's having. That coach is just going to do what they want. When they've finished with them, they pass them to another coach who does what they want.
yep.
And you're like, well, what do you think the outcome's going to be?
And the irony there is, Jason, I think that from my experience, a lot of parents actually spend more time invested in their kids' soccer journey than they do in their kids' educational journey at school. It's like, you know,
Oh.
they spend more time and effort and energy on their football journey than they do on their. And
Yeah.
obviously, part of that's probably because, you know, the systems in the schools are run by state and stuff like that, so they probably got more trust in it. I don't understand it, but their energy and their emotional energy is much more invested in the kids' football journey. But yet they won't ask the questions, and they and but some will tolerate, you know, a crappy environment and, you know, not nice coaches and a win at all cost mentality, because because they just think that's the right place to be.
Oh yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it here. You know, you've got kids that are playing for teams that win. The
Yeah.
coaches are like inappropriate in terms of the behavior.
Yeah.
They accept it. But then you'll have a nice coach who's great for your child, will help them develop into a good person, but they might lose a few. No, we're
Yeah,
off.
that's the same here.
It's
That's the same
sad.
here. We had a game. It was last season. This is an under 15s last season game, and this team was top of the league with us. I think we were both joint top at the time. And you know, I mean, the guy got a ban, not after our game, but he's got a ban anyway, their coach. But honestly, Jason, it was horrific. Like swearing at his players. We had the VO up, so we caught something on the VO, and we actually sent it
Wow.
into the league for a safeguarding issue. They completely ignored it. The league did. He got done for something else in the end, which is not a surprise. And I'm not digging out anyone here, because we all, you know, I don't know the other coach personally, but it was completely wrong. He was quite a young coach, but it was completely
Right.
wrong. Like swearing at the players, some of the things it was completely unacceptable. And the parents could hear this. And I remember at the end of the game just going to the parents and saying, "You're okay with your kid being here, are you?" And they were like, didn't know what I was talking about. Like, yeah, it's fine. I, you know, he's a bit crazy sometimes. He gets carried away, the coach, blah, blah, blah. It's like, that's not carried away. That's not crazy. That is not right.
No.
But they're paying like a premium amount of money to put their kids in this environment. We're a grassroots football team, so everything's quite
Right.
cheaper, and it's run like it's supposed to be in our eyes. But
Yeah.
these are one of these kind of private academies where they charge a bit more, or a fair bit more. But I can't believe it. But the parents will. It's okay, because they win games. They were top of the league, and actually, I think they actually won the league. So, what do I
Yeah, I think that's probably coming to into the world more over the last 10, 15 years where you know, parents like bragging about the kids. I mean, I
know?
don't, my parents never bragged about any of us. You
Yeah.
know, they didn't do it back then.
No.
But I think it's definitely the same here, where it's like, people like bragging about what the kids are doing.
But it's weird, isn't it? Because you're basically, it's not you. You know, you're associating your kid with kind of something that I wouldn't want to be proud about. It's, I guess, it is a it's a perceptional thing, isn't it? You know, and
Yeah.
but I also think it's an educational thing. I do think some of the parents that I speak to, they just haven't had the miles under their belt to understand, you know, what this journey probably should look like for their child and what it could look like for their child. And they only know this, and it's like, well, actually, this is our options are basically to either go to a not so good team that's probably just as bad with regards to the environment anyway, or you know, a team that might win some stuff, but the environment's not much better, but they win things at least. And I think, well, there's your
Yeah.
choice, you go for that one. But actually, there is another whole world out there of people that, you know, you could still win things. I don't think development and winning don't come hand in hand. You can still do both. You just have
Yeah.
to do it in a more, maybe in a more steady way, and recognize that actually sometimes if you've got to drop a point or two here or there, or a game or two here and there, for the rewards you're going to get out of it in 6, 12, 18 months, a couple of years, like, it's worth it. But not everyone
Yeah, well,
buys
like
that,
we
do
said
they?
earlier, your true self, your true character will always come out when you come across a little bit of adversity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
they're gonna come across a lot of that in their life, especially in sports.
Yeah.
And it's like, but so now they come across a problem, you just up and leave.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
But, you know, these kids are gonna have kids. So how do you think they're gonna parent them when it comes to youth sports?
Yeah.
It's just
Yeah.
going to be
Or
a vicious cycle. It's the same.
when they work in business, they've got their jobs, they're working, these are transferable life skills, right? It's just about being, you know, the things you can learn by doing the right things, sticking things out, back to your seven elements, you know, having the behaviors, doing things right, keeping things fun. Well, okay,
Because
so
now
we've
at college sports here now, they've got this transfer portal now. So as soon as you're not happy, you know, you in England, you go to college to study academically, don't you?
yeah.
But now they've got this transfer portal. If you're playing football, American football or soccer, or whatever, and you don't get picked and you're upset, you can just go on the transfer portal and another coach from another school will pick you and
Come
you'll
take
go
you
over to
on.
that school. So now you're like, oh, great
How does
job.
that
Now
build
you can get a
resilience?
plus.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like not only can they do this in the youth life at club, they can now do this at college if they do get to go and play a college sport. When they leave college, what do you think we've created when that person
Yeah.
now is going to a job?
Yeah. I don't like it. I'm not going in today. I'm going to go somewhere else. Yeah. There's not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've spoke about the cultural shift, too many leagues, accountability. I don't want to, I mean, that's three fantastic ones there. Before we move on a little bit, is there a fourth one, or is there something else you want to mention before, or is that the
I
main
mean,
three?
yeah, that's
Well,
the
you could
main
have 20. I
three.
know you we could go by the
That's
book.
the main three that I think you know would be a start, and those three are really, really hard, you know, especially the culture shift. That's
Well, that's my next question going to be, you know, I mean, you've touched a little bit, but are they fixable, Jason? I mean, let's be realistic, because I want to be optimistic here, but my genuine perception of grassroots football in England that I see from my limited picture of it is getting worse. By that, I mean it's becoming more winning focused, it's becoming more short-termist, it's becoming more, you know, all the bad things I think we had around in the 80s a little bit, like, that have kind of creeping back a little bit. Coaching broadly, I think, has improved, but we've moved now on to win at all costs again. And I don't know how to change it. And I'm, you know, I'm not, maybe it doesn't need changing, but in my view, it does need changing. But I don't know, and I don't see it getting better. Do you think it's possible to change some of these things, and could things get better? And if so, how might that happen?
Absolutely, it's possible. And it's not in my DNA to just say, oh, this is poor. I'm just going to go in this system and run it the same as everybody else. Not that my way is right. That's probably sounds terrible, not running it. But I can't be in a system that I think is wrong, but I'm just going to fit in with everybody. You know, when I first started doing the game model at FC Portland, people are like, you've no chance. And it's like, okay, but I'd rather fail trying.
Yeah, doing it the way you want to do it, the
And you know, and if it
compromise.
didn't work or whatever, and then someone ended up coming up to me saying, hey, look, you're out of here. We don't like that. It didn't work. I'd still be happy that I tried.
Yeah.
So I think you can do it, but I still think it needs strong leaders, doesn't it?
From the
To come
top.
in. Yeah. And like I
Yeah.
said, this servant leader, change your mindset of what can I do for you?
Yeah.
That's not what you can do for us. Keep paying us all this money for all your licenses. Everything costs. No, what can we do for you? You know, it's like, I just always say US soccer should have their own TV channel where they show games, they show coaching clinics, they have psychologists speaking on that. And this is what would help me. If people like that are shouting it from the rooftops and you're doing that, you know, if US soccer came up with a long-term development plan and it was different than our game model, I would look at that and try as much as possible to incorporate what they're saying. Because you apply for a job in, you look at a job application in Canada, and the criteria on every job application is you must follow the Canadian long-term development plan. That's on the job application for any, even at club. So yeah. You're like, well, they're trying to change. You apply for never mentions anything like that in a job application for a club in US soccer, or you apply for a college job, they never ask for a coaching qualification in soccer to coach college. You're like, how can you not be asking for a coaching qualification?
It just seems bizarre,
in a
doesn't
job,
it?
Yeah, it doesn't. That's like saying to a rocket scientist, have you got your A license?
Yeah.
It has no relation to that job. So I would never say, oh, I'm not doing it. It's too hard work. People don't believe in it. I'm still, you know, 5 years in, just scratched the surface, but I'm still going to keep going. This is what I believe in. What do I do if I don't do that, Scott? Do I just let everybody just do what they want?
No, I thought 5 years ago that I was really impressed by how coaching had changed. So I've kind of coached 10 years, and 10 years ago, I thought coaching just started to change a little bit in the sense of things like, you know, we were moving away from kind of unopposed practice, drill based, stop, stand still coaching. We'd moved into kind of like, you know, me and my ball and stay on it and player central rather than coaching. There's some really good things I thought that came out. And I saw my coaching change from, you know, being pretty average and old school to being a bit more fun, environmental, kid-centered, that kind of stuff. And I like that. And I think for 5 years it improved. I think the last 5 years, even though the coaching I think is still pretty good, and you know, most kids have a ball now at training, and you know, it's high intensity, and you know, there's some good stuff going on. The match day experience and the win at all cost focus, and they're trying to be like basically the professionalization of the youth sports, like that is almost not undermined all the coaching stuff that's improved, but it's certainly just sense of set it backwards in some ways with regards to player development. How much of what you spoke about do you see on match days as well? Do you see more aggressive match day experiences? Or is the environment more hostile? Is there more rows? Are people shouting the refs more? Because I've noticed that as well on match days, where this manifests itself out. This win at all costs manifests, you know, in other areas, but certainly on match day. Is that the same in this what you've seen, or is it not so much the case?
That's definitely getting better. Obviously, I can only talk about locally. In Oregon. But that's getting better, because we've had some, you know, we've had some terrible moments where referees have been abused, and you know, and it's like I'm an advocate for having referees, but I still want them to be held accountable. I'm, in my opinion, I don't think the state holds them accountable. It's like you pass a referee course, everybody passes. Now you're giving a job to referee. Well, who's looking after them? Those poor kids. But I think that's our job as a club to tell the parents, hey, look, let's behave. You know, on our fields, we've got signs that say, hey, red card to abuse, respect the officials. We have signs at our
but
field.
Opposition teams that come and play, you guys don't know their names here, but I'm thinking like, it'd be great to hear that it's getting better. But for us, I believe we're seeing anecdotally is it's getting worse. The match day experience is getting worse for kids and younger kids as well. And to me, it's linked in a little bit to this win at all costs and this kind of short-termism view. But maybe if you're not seeing that there, I'm sure from your side of things, you try and do things right, but you can't control your position all the time, can you? And the people that come to you?
No, yeah, you know, obviously our parents, you know, we're not angels, but I think if you're working on that culture and you keep sending them a message that we don't do that here, you know, as soon as I hear, my pet peeve is when the parents yell shoot or pass.
Instruction,
so I'll be yelling across the field saying, stop coaching them.
There's only one coach here. Yeah.
Yeah. And but you know, other clubs are not as forceful on that. But in general,
it's not a problem.
No, I think
that's good.
We're actually doing okay.
That's good to hear. That is good to hear. I think.
Yeah, we're doing okay on that.
Yeah. Okay. So a general question here then again, just feeding into this a little bit. Crystal ball now. How do you think coaching may look like then? Or the world, not coaching, but how much grassroots soccer in the US next 5 to 10 years? How do you see it developing? You know, not just in relation to what we spoke about, but more broadly.
Well, I put a part in the book where, you know, where are we now? You know, but I put a comment in there and it says, you cannot solve a problem until you acknowledge that you have one and accept responsibility for it. We've not acknowledged at the moment that we have a problem. So if you're saying, where do you think we're going to be in the next 5, 10 years? I think it'll be worse. I think we'll have no official. I'm really worried we'll have no game to go to because there'll be no officials.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, I've just said it's getting better here, but I know it's not getting better all over the country. And if organizations are sending referees in that have just passed a course and they've not been vetted properly, and then that person comes on the field and they don't know the rules,
it doesn't
I
help,
know
does it?
The game's emotional. So some parents are going to react.
Yeah.
Parents react, that kid, that child, or that person will quit refereeing. So we've not acknowledged that's the problem, Scott. So it's going to be worse. There's going to be more leagues. You know, development of players. You know, the men's team is definitely going to struggle. If we don't acknowledge there's a problem, Scott, and try and fix it, it's not going to. You're not look. You know, in '94 when they had the World Cup, and you're like, oh, we're progressing, and you could see it, and now it's like, oh, it's getting worse, and it's getting worse, and it's getting worse, and it's getting worse. But no one's doing anything about it.
Does it have to get to a point, Jason, where it gets so bad that suddenly then people acknowledge it? Is that the problem? Is that where you have to get to with this, do you think? And be a shame if you do, right? Because
you've got to acknowledge there's a problem and you've got to be brave enough to do something about it.
With it, yeah.
And you're gonna get pushback. You are.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, you're gonna get people unhappy whether you don't do it. You know, like myself, do something about it, and then when you do something about it, you're going to get. I got tons of pushback when I went into FC Portland and said, "Right, we're going to work off a plan." But it's like,
I guess the question
I've got people now that want to do it.
Yeah, but Jason, I believe you make decisions that you think are in the best interest for the players you support. That's what I believe with you. I think
players are number one.
Yeah, this isn't a Jason decision. This isn't you saying, well, I think works. You're saying, okay, look, from my understanding of things, this is what I think is best for the players. Now, I'm happy to be corrected on that. And if there's something better, then let's do that instead.
Absolutely.
You know? And I think that's the bit, you're right. That's the thing. Let's agree what that looks like and then say, okay, is what we're doing that, you know, individually and collectively as, you know, as a sport. And if it isn't, then let be our benchmark, right? Let that be our, you know, the thing we should aspire to, what's best for the players. Cause you know, some of these things around the culture, around the leagues and around accountability, it would be really hard for someone to sit in a room and say, actually, I think what their current state of play is best for player development. But I guess they got to have the conversation in the first place, right? People got to want to have the conversation.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, mate. It's it's hard, you know. Change is hard for everybody.
It's supposed to be a happy Christmas episode, Jason. Well, not.
I know. But it's like if I'm doing this and someone says that's not right, I think we spoke about it before we come on. If you tell me this is not right, fine. What is your way?
Yeah.
You show me your way, and I'm
it's
big enough
for the players.
I love that.
Yeah,
I am going to do that.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, at the moment, you know, and this is what I say to the coaches. Well, no one can tell me whether this is right or wrong because not every one of you has bought in.
Yeah.
But if every one of you buys in and it starts going south and going wrong, we'll adapt.
Then we know. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You've got to show me that you're trying this. And it doesn't work, then we'll adapt.
Yeah, well,
You
it's the
talk.
same as a player. If a player comes training and doesn't get better because they're not trying their best to get better, you don't know if the training session doesn't work. You don't. It's impossible, is it? You need to know that they need to try first, and then we see if they're still not working, then we have to make some changes, right? Yeah.
You know, everything in life is about making decisions, you know, thinking of what's going on around you, having some options, pick one.
Be
If you get it
open-minded.
wrong,
Pick one.
if you
Do
get
your
it
best.
wrong,
Commit to it.
adapt,
Yeah.
you know, try and take a different path, pick another one then if that's wrong.
Yeah.
Keep picking one until you're like, all right, I've got it. Because life's about problem solving, isn't it? It's hard.
Absolutely. Jason, thank you so much. Just with the book then, just broadly, what are you hoping for the book then? Obviously, not just loads and loads of sales. But I don't know, it's not the reason you do these things. I know it's not. But what are you hoping? Is it just really to help spread this message and help share, get the conversation going around this, some of this stuff?
Yeah, that like I say, the title is does kind of make me feel uncomfortable
I love it.
because I'm not like that. You
Yeah.
know, I'm like that in terms of my sense of humor, but it's like I'm not bashing anybody.
No,
I'm
it's
just
not
saying,
personal, is it?
it's just we've got to do something about it. If my book helps, you know, if somebody reads a chapter and it helps, that's all I want. There's going to be some chapters in there that people will be like, what a load of nonsense that is. But if you can pick it up and read it, and whether you become a better coach, a better parent, a better player, I give you something that can help you, a better leader at an organization, then it's worth it to me.
Absolutely.
And that's all I want. I just want to bring light on, and this is not just soccer, Scott. This is, you know, this is 9-year-old kids playing basketball where everyone's obsessed about winning. And you know, kids know they'll try it once, and because of that kind of environment, they won't play it again. And you're like, wow, a kid has played something once, they're never going to
Get
play it
that
again
one.
because of that experience they've just had. And you know, we've got to put more on effort from the player more than the outcome. You know, my youngest daughter, she's 10, and she's like tries her best. She's a great teammate, and she can follow tasks. I think that's all you need.
Yeah, to do well.
You know,
Yeah. Yeah.
if you're missing one of those, you're going to struggle. You know, if you
Yeah.
don't follow tasks, you're going to struggle. If you're a crappy teammate, it's going to be miserable for you. If you don't work as hard as you can, you're never going to see your full potential. So this, I always ask my kids those three questions. And that's, it's not rocket science.
Not
Forget
at
about,
all.
you know, forget about their X's and O's. It's
That's
like,
way down the road, and that's not the important stuff,
that's,
is that?
yeah.
That, yeah, that comes much, much later on. I think it is amazingly simple when you kind of just think about it, really. But if you just ask yourself the question, is it best for the kids and their development? You know, and if it's not, why are we doing it? Like, you know, or if what we're doing, can we do it better? I think you don't go too far wrong, but we lose that, I think, in the haze and the mist of chasing something down that maybe, or the whole fear factor of missing out, or the, you know, keeping up with the neighbors kind of thing. Like, it just all these things come to play, and ultimately, it's the kids that pay the price, isn't it? They suffer because the adults kind of get in the way a little bit, and we've got to make sure we don't. We've got to make sure we're there to help them on their journey and enjoy it. But it's not
I mean,
easy.
there's no better job than trying to make it a better environment for our children, is there? That's got
Absolutely.
to, you know,
Yeah.
I'm so lucky. I've got, you know, one of the best jobs in the world.
Yeah.
But it also motivates you, doesn't it? You're dialed in. It's like, well, this is what I want for the kids. And if you've no agenda for yourself, and you know, I always say, are you willing to be successful and not take credit for it? You know,
Because you'll
but
see that,
that's how you've got to be. You
yeah.
know,
But
it's
all the
like, well,
things you put in
my
place now can take years and years and years to pan out, can't they? You don't necessarily see it
yeah.
until, yeah.
I mean, I've got kids now who see me that I coached years ago.
Yeah.
And then I look at, you know, I look at the high school team that we have. What the season we had that we've just had, they will talk about that for the rest of their life.
And that's what it's about, right? Isn't it? Life skills and memories, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Jason, thank you so much. I've said an hour and I know I've gone way over there. With you, I could go on for hours and hours. So I'm so sorry. But thank you so much. This is going to be a hard question for you. And I can't remember what you said the last one, but I would have asked it to you, but it almost doesn't matter now. But because we've covered so much, I'm going to ask it to you anyway, because it'll put you on the spot a little bit. But we ask all our guests, as you well know, if you could change just one thing about the world of grassroots football and or coaching, what would that be? And it's going to be hard because you've got to pick one.
Yeah, the world that would kind of be difficult, wouldn't it? It's like
Yes.
they don't know what's going on in all over the world. The US obviously spoke about culture, but it would be have this long-term mindset for children. You know, instead of this, what's happening now, this instant success, let's get them in there and have this long-term vision. That long-term vision will eradicate a lot of the anxieties that they have and the self-worth that they feel, and get them to, they're playing because they love it. And then whatever happens, and this is why sometimes I use myself as an example to the kids and said, look, I wanted to play pro, but look where football got me in America, an American citizen. I've got two children in England. I've got three children here and a wife. I'm the director of coaching at FC. You don't think in the 90s I thought, oh, that's what I want to do.
Course, yeah.
And this is where it's got me. I wouldn't be here standing to you now without football.
Yeah.
And this is way more than what I, you know, if you just said to me, what do you want to do? Do you want to do pro or do you want to take this path? I'd have took this path.
Yeah. It's the journey, right? It's the journey you got to focus on and where it leads you, where it leads you to. So that's
And it's
brilliant, Jason.
that long-term thinking.
Yeah, exactly
So
that.
important.
You've been a star. Thank you so much. I'm so grateful again. When you get your third book out, we'll have you back. We'll have you back on before the third book. Don't
Definitely
say
not happening. I know I said it
it.
last time. It's definitely not happening. I'd probably get ousted from the soccer world now with this book.
Jason, if people want to find out more about you, they want to get a copy of the book. Is there a good way of going about that?
Yeah, the book's on Amazon.
Yeah, we'll put the link in then.
I know I had a couple of websites before. I don't have them anymore. I have a Facebook page that's called Soccer Practice Sessions. There's about 38,000 members on there. And it's just all, you know, people are uploading all the practice sessions that they have. Or if any, you know, if anybody wants to reach out and talk about building some kind of game model for them, I just love helping people, Scott. You know, it's, if I've ever can, that's how I've always been like that when I was a player. It's just helping people. That's where I get my all my satisfaction from. So they can email me, and my email is on the FC Portland website. They can email me if they have any questions or they need any help with anything. I'll be more than willing to help them.
Jason, you're a star. We'll put the link to the book on Amazon on the show notes. We'll put the email address in there as well as link to the Facebook page. Look, I'm glad you've written this book. I'm sure it's taken a lot of time and effort and energy, but I think coming from someone like you, and if people make the effort to, if they don't already know you, find out a bit about you, they don't understand it comes from a good place for the right reasons and best intentions. And look, not everything's a car crash, and there's lots of great things that's going on in this world and that's around everything, but particularly around sports. But like when kids are involved, it's important that we try and do our best, isn't it? You know, and all this is trying to do is so let's look at a few things and actually, you know, let's not just talk a game, let's try and see if we can deliver on a few of this stuff. And like it's not necessarily one right way of going about it, but anything that I think shines a light on that and falls to the conversation as it has done for the last hour and 20 minutes with us, I think it's a great thing. So thank you so much for someone that's also passionate about the game and kids. I need people like you in my life to make me just think about things and check stuff and make sure we're doing the right things. And it inspires me, and I'm sure it will inspire listeners too to, you know, have similar thoughts. So, Jason, thank you so much.
Oh, anytime, mate. Good seeing you.
Good seeing you too. Have a Merry Christmas. And what are you doing for Christmas? Are you just home now and settled?
Well, we're home, and then we're going to have a week in Costa Rica.
Lovely. Oh,
Yeah.
that's the way to do it. Look, you really are living the dream. Jason, thanks. Well, no way 2 years. Can we get back on? We spoke about maybe an idea anyway before recording this one. Getting back on maybe before next summer for a catch up and chat around a topic or something, maybe about the coaching courses, something like that maybe. But whatever you think is useful before the middle of next year, would that work for you?
Oh, anytime, mate. Yeah.
Top man. All right. Thanks, Jason. Have a great Christmas. Enjoy Costa Rica.
All right, will do, bud.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly.
Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.